Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This morning, we are excited to welcome Dr. Carter Melland to the air to talk about his book called Stories of a Lost Child. He and Marcy Rendon were on campus here at the beginning of the week to present a program called Contemporary Native Literature. Dr. Melland, welcome. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
What was your reception when you were here at UMD on Monday night? Were you pleased with the participation of the audience?
Yeah, it was super nice. Lots of people showed up and had some nice questions afterwards, and they were attentive listeners as we read, read from our work, people wanted to talk afterwards and get books signed, and that's always a good sign.
We had an interview last week here on the program with Tom Peacock, and he and his wife Betsy have formed a native publishing company, a small native publishing company called Black Bears and Blueberries. And their idea in particular is to get more books in the hands of native kids that are written by natives, but also to give first-time native authors a place where it might be a little bit easier to get your foot in the door. Now, as for you as a professor at the University of Minnesota, and of course, when you work in academia, that publishing part is maybe a little bit easier for you to access. But do you feel that it really is a little bit more difficult for Native people to get their stories told in that way?
Yeah. I mean, of course, it's part of a larger pattern of marginalization. And so it's great that, Black Bears and Blueberries are opening this up. And, with all the technology we have today, makes things so much cheaper to access and generate and get it out there. And that I expect an explosion. I was telling one of the classes I visited at UMD that, 10 years ago, I tried to put together an anthology of Native science fiction stories, and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't find enough writers who'd published science fiction stories. And I think today, I'd be able to do it in about 2 days. I'd be able to put together a whole list of stories, from internet journals and internet literary journals and science fiction magazines. And so I feel like the Native presence in pop culture is increasing exponentially, publishing, video, movies, music, in really encouraging ways.
I think from my perspective, that there seems to be a greater openness toward this and more of a, in many instances, a welcoming attitude. That doesn't come without its own drawbacks, but there seems to be more interest in hearing other people's stories than there might have been 10 years ago.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And once again, I think, with the internet, it just makes things available that people didn't know were available. you don't have to make a special trip out of the house to go, come down to the UMD library rotunda to see two people, Anishinaabe people, talk about their books. You can just hear and learn about it and then maybe come on down. So,
well, tell me a little bit about your book now. It's a work of fiction, and it's a story about a girl who gets a mysterious package in the mail, and she's hoping that it is going to answer some of her questions about her native heritage, when in fact it, in a sense, gives rise to even more questions. Tell us about it a little bit.
Yeah, so the girl's name is Fiona, and she's it's the summer before she goes into high school, and she knows she has native heritage, but her mother won't talk about it. So she doesn't even know what sort of native heritage she has. And she, one day towards the end of summer, she receives a box in the mail, and it turns out it's a set of stories and letters that her grandfather has written for her. He wrote them 18 years before she gets them, and she reads them. You know, she hopes that they're going to answer questions. You know, like be direct. You know, say I was born and I did this and did that. And it turns out he's a little bit more of an elusive character, and so he writes stories about how Custer survives the Battle of Little Bighorn by crawling inside a dead horse, and he writes stories about a priest, you know, who's come to the Anishinaabe back in the 1700s and ends up doubting his faith. And he writes stories about homeless Native men that live along the river in Minneapolis and are dealing with their own issues of trauma, historical boarding school-related trauma. And so she finds herself, you know, things are perpendicular rather than parallel to what she was hoping to get. But it leads her to sort of think about who her grandfather was and why her mother won't talk about him. And so we learn that he left. I mean, she knows that he abandoned his family when her mother was just, you know, 10 or 11. But we know nothing else. She knows nothing else about him. And so she thinks about why her mother won't talk about this. It's quite angry about that, and then arrives at certain kinds of understanding. As she reads his stories are interwoven with her reflecting upon her relationship with her mother and what she knows and doesn't know. So the first half of the book kind of deals with that, and then the second half kind of deals with how does she process that in her life one night when she and her friends break into a church and end up getting chased by some scuzzy guys that live across the street from the church.
What in this story, or is there anything in this story perhaps that parallels your experience? I mean, how amazing. I don't know of anybody with a Scandinavian grandfather who ever wrote anything down. I can't imagine my grandpa writing anything down. That just wasn't the way my grandpa rolled. But did any of this come out of your own experience, or did it come out of something perhaps that you would have wanted or enjoyed yourself?
My dad never knew. So, I mean, in part, it's, you know, loosely based on, you know, family scenarios of my dad never knew his biological father, who was Anishinaabe. And we didn't even know that until the late 80s, you know, when I was approaching 30 years old, and my dad was well into his 50s. And so as we found out about it, you know, it kind of, you know, I think for me, you know, it opened up just all sorts of questions of who am I? Why do I have the, you know, what does it mean to have this heritage? I'd already started graduate school where I was studying Native literature, so I always call it kind of like my cosmic coincidence that brought my field of study and my heritage together that way. So I've been able to, you know, through my academic work and my teaching and my creative writing to sort of explore this question, you know, I have the privilege to explore this question for 25, 30 years, explore kind of how I've been phrasing it lately is I've been exploring what it means to not know that you have Native heritage. You know, what kind of hiccup does that put, you know, into your mentality or your psychology, and then you start to learn about it. You know, what do you do with it? And that kind of becomes the question I feel for Fiona as she sort of navigates reading these stories and thinking about her mother and why her mother won't talk about this man and what it means to know you're Native but not know what that means, which in my, 20 years of teaching Native literature courses here in the Twin Cities, I've just had numerous students that they take my class to find out they've got Native heritage, but it's not spoken of. So I kind of realize that there's a bunch of us out there that are this, have this story, and so I thought that would become the focus of my novel.
It's interesting to look at that in the light of some of the commercials that we see on television for these ancestry things, and somebody discovers perhaps that they have African heritage from a certain place or they have Native heritage from a certain place. And there's been a little bit of pushback from people who say, okay, you have this DNA, but you haven't lived in this culture, and you haven't been an integral part of this culture, and you can't just say now that you are this or you are that, because it isn't just a question of DNA. It's a question of how you've been raised and the community in which you've been raised. Reactions to that?
Yeah, I mean, the DNA thing, that's not the end point. That's the beginning, right? Just like you're saying, just because you have DNA doesn't mean much, and so then it depends on how do you reach out to the community? How do they respond to your reaching out? Why are you doing it? So gaining recognition from the community of which you're biologically part, is more important than the DNA in a lot of ways. It's kind of the walk, you got to walk the walk. You can't just talk the talk kind of thing, as I see it. And I, for one, in my, 25, 30 years of exploring this, I've felt most welcomed, as I interact with people who did grow up, in the community, who did grow up, with full knowledge of who they are. And so I've always felt very welcomed, because I think I approach it from a place of being humble. It's like, I know nothing, so whatever you have to offer is great, and I would love to think about it. I go to a language table weekly, or try to go weekly. Lately, my schedule's messed with that because I was at UMD on language table day. But language table is where you go and learn to speak your language and learn about the philosophy embedded in the language and the cultural values embedded in the language. And so I try to use that, those kinds of things in my fiction and in my academic writing. Those indigenous perspectives to help make sense of whatever it is I'm looking at. If it's in fiction, the story, the plot, and if it's in academia, the question I'm always asking is, why are we destroying the world? we're sensible people, but we're insensible in our abuse of our environment. And so I use Anishinaabe values to look at that, too, or I try to.
Well, you're sharing your story, Carter, on a number of fronts, personally, academically, and, of course, through your fiction. And thank you so much for being our guest this morning. It was great to have you.
Yeah, thank you. I was happy to chat with you.
Dr. Carter Melland, our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
KUMD programming is supported by the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, encouraging you to remember the threat the emerald ash borer and the gypsy moth pose to our state's trees. Always use local or certified heat-treated firewood to slow their spread. More info online at saveourash.net.
Radio Gallery airs on KUMD Wednesdays at 4 p.m. and again Friday on Northland Morning. Or listen online at KUMD.org. Learn more about the artists, see their work, and listen to past shows. Radio Gallery is sponsored in part by the Red Mug Coffee House and Gallery.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native communities across the country are investing in growing the workforce for young Native people. Many tribal nations continue to face a number of challenges in this area, including high